future.
They protect the people of South Africa. These are the men of Squad Cars.
Live around the campfire, this is how it sounds. And I've just been on a fantastic trip recently. Soon I did a fantastic trip into the heart of the Karoo with our very dear friends Chris and Julie, Chris Moreira and Julian Dutoy. They've written a series of Karoo road books, photographed and published by Julian and Chris in a massive quilt of magic stories brought to you from the outback of South Africa. And to talk to us about them now, on the line, all the way from, what is the new name of your lovely hometown, Chris?
Hi, Dave. Craddock is now officially in Cuba.
Gee.
After 20 years of writing books,
Chris, unfortunately, this line is just not holding it. Shall we take a breather and I'll come back and try you on a clean line?
Okay, that's no problem.
I'll chat to you in a sec. Chris, are you there?
I'm right here. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah. That's better. That's good.
Oh, that's excellent.
Okay. So let's unpack the premise, because as I said earlier in the introduction, if you were listening to the show, that we'll be launching a brand new podcast series going forward. And the podcast series is going to be literally chapter by chapter taking us on a road trip through the Karoo. It's going to be concentrating on your third in the trilogy of Karoo road books. And it's a collection of more than 60 outstanding Karoo stories in the three books, gathered over 20 years of rambling on dirt roads and forgotten highways in snow and sunshine. And the characters that you come across, they are just some of the most precious people on the planet. But let's start with the beginning of the story, Chris. How did you find yourselves after a very high-profile run as a journalist and an editor in some of the big publications in the country and the big newspapers in the country? You then opted out and ended up many of us thought that you'd kind of lost the plot, because I mean, who on earth would go and live in Craddock in the Karoo? But you obviously knew more than we did, because it's become, the Karoo has become almost synonymous with the heart of South Africa, or the soul of South Africa, and everyone seems to be wanting to get back to the heart and soul of South Africa in the nicest possible way. So a road trip into the Karoo now is the thing to do. How did you guys decide on that venture 20 odd years back, or more, longer?
You know, Julie and I used to travel from Johannesburg to assignments in Cape Town, and the Karoo was this barren, flat place that we couldn't wait to get through fast enough. And then one day we did a very slow meander through the Karoo to Cape Town for a change. We set the world land speed record for the slowest trip in a motor car from Johannesburg to Cape Town of 27 days. We stopped at lots of little towns, and we started to feel a taste for the Karoo. And then we came to Craddock on an assignment, and we just met the locals, who turned out to be just the kind of people we wanted to live with. We loved Joburg, but, you know, there comes a time when you need a change of scenery. You need a change of pace and a little bit more depth. And I wanted, both Jules and I wanted to take our work into a more focused sphere. And this is it. We found the Karoo. The Karoo found us. We were accepted. And, you know, you're so right. This place, the Karoo, has become a brand, a proper heartland brand of South Africa. You see it everywhere. You see it in the farm stays that are now becoming popular. You see it in the food that is being marketed from the Karoo. You see it in various other products, in the tours that people are offering, specific tailor-made heritage tours. And you also see it in this explosion of books, which we are, I'm pleased to say, very much part of. Mm. And, you know, I just have to tell you, we're so excited at the moment, because after even after 20 years of writing books and 14 published books, etc., etc., when a new book is in the offing, when a new book is about to arrive, it's like a baby coming from the hospital. And everything is prepped here, waiting for the arrival of Carew Road 3.
Echo haste you, they sound me trafalgar, yeah, you could save it. Echo haste you, echo haste you, that will carry me to live.
Carew Roads 1 and 2 have been sellout successes, and Carew Roads 3 has been oversubscribed already pretty much. It will be available, and it will be available on order through used to be mail order in back in the day. Now it's online, I'm sure. The point is, I think many people latch onto what they can in terms of material for the armchair travel as they plan the real thing. The Carew, it has become extraordinarily popular among people that I think have, I suppose, longed in a sense to do what you've done and to go and head away from the big smoke and to find somewhere real to connect with something like that. For you, what has the experience of actually doing it been like?
It's been like, if you can imagine stepping into a cave and finding, it's the old story, the Aladdin's cave, finding a huge treasure chest, opening the treasure chest and just discovering endless baubles. Because to my wife, partner, Julie, and myself, a good story is like a diamond to other people. And because we are storytellers, we are from a long line that goes back maybe 1,000 years to people that used to travel from town to town, entertaining whatever. We feel a connection to that, and so the Carew has been that treasure chest of narrative for us.
Well, you've distilled it into a series of books, the Carew Roads trilogy. The third in the series has just been released, and we're going to be traveling with you now in this Carew Roads podcast companion. It's a series that I'm sure is going to be extraordinarily well-traveled with people that have longed to join you on your adventures, and now they can by means of this podcast audio series, and hopefully it will encourage them to buy the books and then to reach out and make contact with you and hopefully join you on the road on one of your adventures. Let's take a listen to the first story in the series.
The first story in the series is about the Calphinia Museum. It's about a mission to the Calphinia Museum. There are treasures to be found in little museums in the small Platteland towns. And in this chapter, we search for the Golden Fleece of the Carew. It's a search which begins and ends in this little Calphinia Museum in the Northern Cape. Approaching the Huntam Berge near Calphinia in the Northern Cape, we bring the mother of all seasonal thunderstorms in tow. Jagged streaks of lightning cross the sky. Dark veils of rain sweep wide across the horizon. The streets of Calphinia are drenched, but no one is rushing for shelter. There's been an 8-year drought, and any form of rainfall is a cause for celebration. Farmers are dancing in the veld, And when you pitch up in a Karoo town in the middle of a thunderstorm, everyone gives you rain credits. Dankie vir die reën. We have the famous Booker Hayes on Water Street, all to ourselves, courtesy of Alta and Edwin Kutsier, who also thank us for the downpour. Normally reserved for serious writers needing a place in the country to work on their manuscripts, the Booker Hayes is a large Karoo-style home with a library full of noble tomes. But the Kutsiers don't mind the nature of our seemingly frivolous mission. They know us by now. At dawn the next morning, we go street walking through a rain-washed Kalfinia. The storm has left the air clean, the dust is tamped down, and the day is full of possibilities. All the lovely, familiar things are still here. The Blixum's a big postbox, the biggest in the world. Dr. Kutsier's golden Rolls Royce, they say he used to herd livestock with it. The Five Roses enamel tea sign atop number 17 Water Street. The humble little Hope Street building housing a newspaper with a big backstory. And look, there goes the town's remarkable singing traffic cop. Kalfinia is just as we left it 6 years ago. We arrive at the Kalfinia Museum. As curator Memsi van Wyk and her assistant Adonis de Veer are opening the doors to the erstwhile Jewish synagogue. This museum isn't perhaps as expansive as the McGregor in Kimberley, but it's so eccentric it can leave you smiling for days. Take, for instance, the section dedicated to the Lombard quads of Lauriersfontein. Born in Kalfinia in 1951, Plassie, de Waal, Jan and de Villiers all turned 70 sometime this year. It's a Platteland thing to be nicknamed after the profession, trade or general item for which you are most locally famous. Swace van Rensburg, Tyres van Sale, Fitzpomp Ferreira, Willem Stahl, Piers Kalf Marais, Eisterfark Potgieter, and so on. The story goes that immediately after she gave birth to the quads, Johanna Lombard became known locally as Honey Fiedlin. The Philadelphia Inquirer caught up with the six-year-olds in 1957. The American newspaper reported that the Lombard quads used to sing and rock each other to sleep at night. Now that's a show one could sell tickets to. The quads were identical, so much so that when they were babies, the hospital pinned name tags to them. Honey stayed in hospital from February till April. In fact, she only saw them 11 days after the birth. Her two daughters, 8 and 4, were delighted and heard to exclaim, "Two for you and two for me." Apart from a collection of family photographs in the Lombard room, 4 child-sized dolls dressed in bow ties, waistcoats and cricketing whites, each holding a little shepherd's crook, 4 walking rings, 4 cots, 4 christening robes, 4 babies' bonnets and what looks to be 4 toddler leashes are on display. Honey Fiedling wasn't going to let any of them escape from under her eye. And here's Trekboer Corner, with an aging diorama of a settler couple, completely engrossed, as they have been for many, many years, in preparing supper in their outdoor Aspos Skadum, live bush shelter. There's even a glow in the fire. Not long after the Trekboers came to live here permanently, the Jewish Smosa traveling traders arrived. Many of them stayed on, opening various enterprises that ranged from general goods stores to later automobile shops. Others were farmers, photographers, hoteliers, chemists, and doctors. Some became rich during the ostrich boom just before World War I. Just check out the elegant Carmel Villa guest house on Pastorie Street. It was once owned by a trader called Leon Helfert, who had a shop in town and shares in another establishment down south in Middelpos, where even today they still sell their sweeties to the kids in newspaper twists. Many old synagogues in Karoo towns have morphed into something quite different. The Jewish synagogue in Craddock became a legal aid office with a big roof attachment lending maximum 1980s ugliness. The Graafrenet one is now a postdoof club. The imposing Kalfinia Synagogue, built in 1919, was eventually donated to the municipality for use as a museum in 1970. The 120-odd Jewish families who lived there once are commemorated as a community in a special section of the museum. a relatively small but very significant glassed-in box has found its way to the Jewish section. Inside is a four-legged ostrich chick, its little beak gently resting on a stick. A Calphinia carpenter, remembered only as Dupria, glued two artificial legs to the stuffed chick more than a century ago, back when snake oil salesmen were just as thick on the ground as they are today. Dupria used to move from farm to farm doing the odd carpentry job. To make a few bucks on the side, he took his four-legged ostrich with him and charged the farm children a penny each to see it. It finally became the possession of a prominent local, Max Rosenblatt, who donated it to the museum, and to this very day, people like us continue to pay to see this wondrous apparition. Nearby is what looks like a courtroom jury box. On the wall is a tribute to Judge Leopold Greenberg, a Calphinian who presided over the sensational Daisy DeMelka murder case in 1932. Remember Daisy? She married two plumbers and poisoned them both for the insurance. Then somehow her 20-year-old son displeased her, so she killed him as well. Daisy was sent to the gallows. Many locals have donated their family trinkets to the museum. There's a pair of shoes that formed part of Mrs. Sunny Nell's bridal outfit on her wedding day in 1868. And here's a coat spun from the thread of 2,000 silkworms. Mrs. Charlotte de Witt fed them a daily sugar bag full of mulberry leaves for 2 weeks and kept vigil over them day and night, catching a couple of hours sleep once in a while. Outside stands a Victorian-era version of a camper van, a smoke wagon that served as both the traders' sleeping quarters and stockroom. It is simply a container-sized wooden box on metal wheels drawn, one surmises, by a sturdy team of oxen. In one of his books, titled The Land of Afternoon, written by Lawrence Green, he describes the smoke life thus. In the days when farmers lived in extreme isolation, the smoke was a welcome visitor. Some of his stock in trade might be glittering rubbish, but he also carried useful articles. Knives sold by the wandering smos are still giving service on distant farms. Biblical and other oleographs adorn the walls of farm homesteads. His trinkets survive in jewelry boxes passed down from mother to daughter. Right next to it is the classic 1952 Ford V8 Bucky with its distinctive white grille. In the wool boom days, it was a farmer's favorite, full of style and attitude. That very model was Ford's maiden crossover from farm-only vehicle to general market jammy. To lure buyers from the city, the Ford marketing team went into top gear, touting all the comforts of what they dubbed the million-dollar cab because of its huge redesigned budget. The cab was said to be quieter and wider, sporting innovations like an easily read instrument panel, sun visors, and an ashtray. Hot stuff. Holding court near the entrance of the museum stands the Makadas Class 24 steam loco that used to haul Calphinia's wool to Williston, then to Hutchinson, and finally onto the main line to the markets of Old Port Elizabeth. Why Makadas? Various theories abound. The English version is that a bored fireman told his driver to make a dash. The Afrikaans version is that makadas, makadas is the rhythmic sound made by the slowly turning wheels of the locomotive as it gathered speed. Take your pick. MC van Wyk, born and bred in Calphinia, has been a curator of this museum for a decade. She keeps a record of the 1,700-odd items, big and small, in storage and on display here. Everything has a story, she says, and it is such a joy when you find that story. Like the possible background to an unsigned painting donated by one Amina Adams, it's of a wagon in the veld manned by people of color. Trekboers, one discovers, came in all shades. This particular group in the painting are possibly busters, trekking northwards from the colonial Cape to the wildest spaces along the Orange River. In fact, when one digs a little deeper, it emerges that trekboot parties consisted of just about any nationality or hue imaginable, from San to Spaniard. Adonis de Vere is Memsi's right-hand man. He was born on a nearby farm, picking up some essential skills like wire fencing, painting, meat processing, and product packing. He ensures the gardens are looking as beautiful as a drought cycle will allow. Together, they keep this classic Karoo Imaginarium shipshape and often updated with little innovations. But where's the fluffy sheep, we ask Adomus. Come, let me show you. So off we go to an adjoining building, and there, under glass, is the scruffiest merino you ever saw, the Pochenpool. The morning light shines through the window and casts an amber glow on the Pochenpool's shag, and for a brief, fanciful second, we feel like the Greek Arcanauts of old. We have found the golden fleece. Its owner is possessed of kindly eyes, a hint of a smile, dainty little feet, and a matching set of curled horns. This fellow once belonged to Dani Pochenpool from Boonekraal Farm up in the Roggeveld Mountains. It went AWOL from its flock for a few years and skipped many shearing seasons. It was so remarkably tatty that the farmer kept it like that, and when it died, had it stuffed and donated to the Calphurnia Museum. The Pochenpool sheep lives on, behind glass and under the watchful eye of the Calphurnia Museum curator and her able assistants.
For an insider's view on life in the Karoo, get the three book special of Karoo Roads 1, Karoo Roads 2, and Karoo Roads 3 by Julian de Toy and Chris Marais for only 760 Rand, including courier costs in South Africa. For more details, contact Julie at julie@karoospace.co.za.
Deels en meisjes is fris geboren. Heb wat je gezegd, het zal ik kon doen. Heb wat ik wil is om jou vast te kloen. Je kon wees toe. Echo haste to, ek wil graag met jou lief beleef.